Disney's Loki raises big questions. Joe Heschmeyer's glorious purpose is to answer them. Next on Focus. Hello and welcome to Focus, the Catholic Answers podcast for living, understanding, and defending your Catholic faith. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. And like many people, I've watched Loki, the new series, the new Marvel series on the Disney Plus platform. And it's pretty good. And one of the good things about it is it raises some ultimate questions, some questions of meaning and purpose and God and gods and all that kind of stuff. And if you got some ultimate questions, who better to ask than one of these Catholic Answers apologists? So here's what Joe Heschmeyer had to say about Loki. Joe Heschmeyer, apologist here at Catholic Answers. Nice to have you in the studio.
Thanks. It's good to be in the studio.
And you've seen Loki.
I have seen Loki.
The 6-episode TV series from Disney Plus.
Yes, I'm a lifelong Marvel fan, so it was... I did it before it was even work.
Well, a lot of guys here in the building, mostly from the video department, really wanted us to take a look at Loki. And the idea was it raises quite a few issues that are related to what we do, ultimate questions kind of issues. You felt that way?
I did. Even as the show is going on, they occasionally almost flag, like, here's a big issue to think about. And then the action kind of moves forward while you've got those big questions in the back of your mind.
Yeah, and I didn't think that it resolved all of them.
I mean,
maybe drama's not supposed to resolve all of them. I don't know. But it was kind of cool to see that they were raised.
Yeah, it's not like a Terrence Malick film. It's a Marvel like superhero show.
Right.
And so I think it's intending to just say, oh, yeah, that's kind of an interesting thought. Yeah. And then it plays with it a little bit more than trying to come up with any real conclusion to it.
Well, how about if I show you some clips and we'll talk about issues that these clips raise?
Should we give a spoiler warning? If you haven't seen the show.
Yeah. Don't watch what we're about to do.
Exactly. You're going to be annoyed with us.
And we both enjoyed it. I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah. Maybe a content warning for parents, especially maybe thinking about it for their kids. There are a couple scenes, one in particular that sort of alludes to bisexuality, and I think there's a little bit of language throughout. It's, I think, intended for teenagers and older. Bear that in mind.
Yeah, and as much as we appreciate the work that Disney does, this is something that's common in Disney work now.
Unfortunately, they've really tried to use this as a bully pulpit for the cultural revolution.
Exactly. All right, so let's go time traveling, and we'll. First of all, I probably should set this up. There are two characters that you're about to see if you're watching this or here. One of them is Loki, and the other one is Loki, because one of the themes of this show is a multiverse where there might be another Joe Heschmeyer that's just a little bit different from you, and then there might be other Joe Heschmeyers that are very different from you, and it goes on and on. Maybe there's an infinite number of Joe Heschmeyers. Yes. They don't say. But
yeah, I feel like the Latin nerds listening to this show are like, isn't Loki already plural? But this is L-O-K-I.
this is an Anglo-Saxon term. This is not Latin. Ready?
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
All right, well, slow down, variant.
What part of imminent death confuses you? Don't call me variant.
I'm sorry, but I'm not calling some faded photocopy of me Loki.
Good, because that's not who I am anymore. I'm Sylvie now.
Oh, you changed your name. Brilliant.
It's called an alias.
It's not very Loki-like.
Yeah? What exactly makes a Loki a Loki?
Independence, authority, style.
All right, so there's the two of them talking, both of whom are Loki. I like it's not very Loki-like. It's a little play on not very ladylike that people often say to women. But so what does that raise for you when you watch that? What came, because I know this one was one that you thought, oh, that's a major issue that was
yeah,
raised.
The principle of identity stuff going on there is really interesting. And I think this is going to sound very strange. There's actually a really solid disproof of atheism embedded in that dialogue.
Okay, so I just want to repeat that because that actually strikes me. You think that there's something here that disproves atheism?
I do.
Okay, so what's that?
I think what they're flagging is that a materialistic, and materialistic here, I don't mean like greedy. I mean people who think matter is all there is, that kind of materialistic. That view of the universe doesn't account for identity, doesn't account for how you can be Cy, I can be Joe. Forget clones, forget variants and replicas. Right. It doesn't account for what makes us us. And you can see this, actually, Carl Sagan had a line. I actually printed it out to make sure I was able to quote him fairly. He says, "I'm a collection of water, calcium, and organic molecules called Carl Sagan. You are a collection of almost identical molecules with a different collective label. But is that all? Is there nothing in here but molecules? Some people find this idea somehow demeaning to human dignity." You think? "For myself, I find it elevating that our universe permits the evolution of molecular machines as intricate and subtle as we are." Well, here's the problem with Sagan's view, and I think that Sylvie is tapping into it. If you are just a collection of molecules, that collection of molecules is changing as we speak.
Yes.
So you don't exist. There's no meaningful sense in which Psy exists. You know, right. That's just the label we slap onto whatever molecules happen to be roughly shaped like you
right.
at any given moment. There's no continuity. There's no principle of any kind of underlying unity
right.
that makes you the same person that you were a year ago or 10 years ago or tomorrow or in the next breath. And so there's just no person there. Like there's no good account for identity, meaning there's no good account for personhood. That's a really basic thing for a worldview to need to provide.
Yeah.
And the fact that even brilliant scientists are saying, the issue is not just that it's demeaning. The issue is that it actually fails to meet the basic...
It doesn't explain.
It totally doesn't explain.
It's non-explanatory. And you just have to live with a non-explanation if you're going to accept that.
Exactly. And so the great thing about the Loki show is there's this multiverse. So you have different matter. And you have, you know, so there is this question of, okay, well, if it's no matter in common at all, we see them next to each other. They're clearly not using the same atoms.
Right.
In what
sense?
So
what's the identity of Loki?
What does it even mean to say both of them are Loki on different timelines?
Right.
Why wouldn't we just say they're two different people? You know, for that, because...
Yeah, they're not the same person.
They're not the same person. Think, yeah. Like identical twins have more in common
yeah.
than these two loci.
Right.
And so then the question becomes, okay, so what does? And it's funny.
What that he makes says a Loki a Loki is a great
which yeah. is like a terrible answer to like how you can all be the same is that you're all unique, yeah. you're all independent.
Right.
And so there's like a certain harmony of style.
Yeah.
That Loki kind of points to as to what makes a Loki a Loki. But of course that can't be a good answer.
No, but that's descriptive. It's still not explanatory.
Mm-hmm.
You only go by a thing that is stylish and independent. That's a Loki? No. What is a Loki? Like, what is a Joe Heschmeyer is a great question. And Sagan's description is demonstrably wrong.
Yes.
It's demonstrably wrong because he says, well, you're a group of molecules and calcium and whatnot, water, that's labeled Joe, and I'm labeled Carl Sagan. Well, actually, it's the label is not what makes me, clearly.
Right.
Everything about me says, this is not just a matter of labeling that makes me. There's something here that you're labeling. What is it?
Right. You could have two strangers whose names you don't know, and you still know they're not the same person.
Yeah. Very well said. Yeah. Right. So that's something... I think this is also demonstrably false. He says it's ennobling to say that the universe has permitted me or something like that. Well, relative to what? I mean, it's not ennobling relative to the claim that I am made in the image and likeness of God. Like, clearly one of those is a nobler thing. You may believe that it's a fantasy, but it's still a nobler thing.
Right. Yeah. So both in terms of which one's a more plausible theory...
Yeah.
And in which one's a more noble theory, Christianity and theism more broadly, winning hands down compared to an atheistic view that says, you know, you're just a clump of cells or
right.
atoms or molecules or fill in the blank. Like that fails to pass the basic threshold test. Now, you'll notice this kind of stuff comes up a lot in the abortion debate. It's like, well, the unborn child's just a clump of cells. And it's like, yeah, but you think I'm just a clump of cells.
Right.
Like, you think we're
yeah.
all just clump? Like,
right.
how could that possibly be your argument?
Well, it's a tiny clump of cells.
Oh, yes.
So we add a modifier to it. Somehow that changes. Well, look at you
in
comparison
can't diet
to the
or
universe.
I'll lose some of my dignity.
Yeah. Right. So you're a tiny clump of cells. Literally, everything that's made out of cells is tiny relative to the size of the universe. So
thank you. That's very flattering.
Yeah. All right,
I'd say if maybe just a couple more things.
Okay.
So the totally materialistic kind of explanation doesn't cut it. You also can't do it on a genetic basis either. You can't say a Loki's a Loki because they have such and such genes, because identical twins share the same genes, and you also have these rare cases where a person will have two genes.
Sets of genes.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's not a good enough explanation. So you ultimately end up needing to point to something like the soul, that you need some sort of form to animate the matter, to put it in kind of Thomistic or Aristotelian terms. And in that case, Loki and Sylvie, this parallel universe Loki, they're not the same person. They're actually just two different people who maybe had similar starting conditions, but they actually have what sounds like pretty different upbringing. So you just have two different people. We're kind of being flagged as the same person without any real explanation for why.
No, right. And I don't believe in the multiverse. I'm not interested in that. I think the multiverse is a silly idea myself. But let's say there is a multiverse and they go, well, there's a you in this other universe. Actually, there is not a me in this other universe. There's another person, but that person is not me. It's not just like me and then another me and then another me. That's impossible given what an individual is.
Exactly. So this question comes up in much more practical terms with twins, with cloning, with all of those things, where it's like, no, you could take the same genes and another person could have the exact same genetic code. There are real life situations where that happens. You know, Tim Staples, his wife is a twin. I don't know if she's an identical twin or not, but my sister's married to an identical twin. Like, twins exist in real life. This is not a theoretical question of are they the same person. They're clearly different people.
Right. Yeah.
And so you can't do it on that basis. You can't do it on the basis of just molecules. Something more than that gives distinct personality to each person. And to make it even more complicated, you have what are called conjoined twins, or sometimes called Siamese twins, where they actually will share, even in some cases, some organs.
Yeah.
And so whatever it is that's making us unique isn't reducible even to organs, which is fascinating.
Because no matter how conjoined those two people are, conjoined means there's two of them.
Yes, exactly.
There's two people there. We all know that that is two people. Okay, so there's, first of all, plaudits, applause to the Loki program for raising this question, because it's a basic fundamental question that it's very easy to avoid. What does it mean to be me? What is this? You know, and we may come to different answers, but it's very, very worth at least exploring and trying to answer that question.
Yes. Oh, and by the way, Carl Sagan, like, the bad answer he has is a pretty standard bad answer.
Yeah.
Like David Hume, the Scottish philosopher from the 17th century, he has a very similar kind of answer. Like, you will find very smart people failing this very basic question of what makes me me pretty regularly, if they even think to ask it.
Right.
So, I like that they raise it.
Okay, we'll go on to our second clip.
Okay.
Because the TVA is my life, and it's real because I believe it's real.
Fair enough. You believe it's real.
Yeah.
So everything is written, past, present, future. There's no such thing as free will.
Well, I mean, you know, it's an oversimplification.
So in fact, in a way, you and I, here at the TVA, we're the only ones who are actually free.
All right, I think that's enough. There's a lot to consider in that clip. Like, they covered a lot. First of all, if I may just say, Owen Wilson is magnificent. And just his pausing and kind of struggling when he says, well, that's an oversimplification. Mm-hmm. That is, I think, brilliant, because what he's really saying is none of this makes any sense. And, you know, if you get it right down to what I'm actually saying, it is ridiculous. But it doesn't hold up. It doesn't.
Right. He's articulating a view that doesn't really make sense. And he's choosing to try to believe something he knows isn't entirely true.
Yeah. Okay. So what struck you about all this?
I think there are several things. First, this question of predestination is a big one. That people always raise this when it comes to if the past, present, and future are written in some way.
Right.
Does that mean people aren't free? And the Catechism actually addresses this in paragraph 599 and 600.
Okay.
Because it talks about this in terms of God's salvific plan. Like, Scripture is really clear that there's a plan of God for Jesus to come into the world, to be crucified for our sins, to die, to rise again. And there are a lot of bad actors in that story. I mean, a lot of people who do bad things. And the question becomes, well, how do we make sense of that if they're doing the things God wanted done in some sense, how could we say those are even bad things?
Right.
And are those people free?
Yeah. Okay. So the classic one, of course, is Judas.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
Judas plays this key part in God's plan, well, in what way is Judas free? And in a certain sense, what Loki is saying when he talks about the TVA, I mean, in the context of the show, it's outside of time in a certain sense. So what he's saying is only those who are outside of time are truly free. Anybody in time is not free, which is the same thing that many people would say about God, that sure, if God's outside of time, he's free, he can do what he wants. But those of us in the story, we're not free because he knows how the story ends. He knows how it progresses.
Yeah, there's a couple things that are really interesting there. The timeline of the TVA itself is not super clear, meaning that you still have an apparent progression of time. You have them having a conversation with back and forth.
Right.
There's clearly some sense of time passing, even within the time variance authority.
Right. So that's not like what
That's not like what God is experiencing, in which everything is the eternal present for him. But the questions they're trying to raise there are raised in an even more profound way of, well, if everything is present to God, how do we make sense of us still being free? And I think that there, again, the Catechism has a couple answers. In paragraph 599, when talking about the salvific plan of God, it says the biblical language, because he is looking at St. Peter's statement that Jesus was delivered up according to the definitive plan and foreknowledge of God. And the Catechism says that language does not mean that those who handed him over were merely passive players in a scenario written in advance by God. That God is using people's free actions. He's not taking away their freedom to make those choices.
Right. But we couldn't do that. We're not omnipotent and omniscient. So people think because we couldn't do it, therefore God can't do it. But he's the one that's holding every quark and electron in the universe in existence. He can do that. He can have that intricate a plan that allows for the story to unfold and for each of us to be free within it.
Yeah. So this is all of the analogies we use to try to explain this are going to fail because we're not God.
Yeah.
And so we can talk about certain things. You know, for instance, penalty kicks in soccer. When you have a kick on goal, the place that statistically you're most likely to get the ball in is kicking it right at where the goalie is, because the goalie usually goes either left or right to try to. So if you knew, okay, this goalie always, you know, goes to the left, which would be a terrible thing to be that predictable as a goalie. But like, if you know he always goes to the left, you could kick with the knowledge of what he's freely going to choose to do, and you've still worked that into your plan.
Right.
Now, that's a pretty lagging kind of analogy, because God isn't just guessing or even guessing with certainty. He sees these things unfolding, as it were, in real time. That still doesn't make it any less free on our part. It just is harder to visualize because that's not how we imagine things. Likewise, if you record the game and go back and watch it 20 times, that goalie doesn't suddenly become a robot. There's still a free choice.
Right.
Even if you know what's going to happen because you've already seen the game. Even if you know with certainty because you're sort of standing outside of the time of that game.
Right.
Looking back, you know. So again, none of those things perfectly capture what's going on from God's perspective, but it points to this idea that when we talk about freedom, we usually conflate two things. One is this probability question, like what is the percent chance I'm going to do something other than what I choose to do? And the second is a capability or volitional issue of, do I actually choose it or is it forced upon me? And we experience the difference, right? There are things that you do because you have no choice in doing them. You know, your heart is beating right now and you had no say in the matter. There are some things that you can't help but to do or can't help but not to do. Like, I'm not choosing not to float into the air right now.
Yeah.
I'm not capable of doing other than obeying the law of gravity.
Yeah.
That's a matter of that second category, kind of volition or choice. But there's also this question of like, what's the likelihood I'm going to choose a certain thing? And oftentimes the likelihood is 0%. I'm not going to have like a sardine sandwich with like metal shavings. And you know with perfect knowledge that in no multiverse am I going to start eating that. There's a 0.0 chance. that doesn't make me not free to do it. It just means that I'm never going to choose that thing.
Right.
The fact that I'm never going to do it is not the same as saying I'm not free to do it. That's a really easy mistake for us to make. So the flip side of that is that God can know with perfect certainty the things that we freely choose to do or freely choose not to do, and he can work that dynamically into his plan.
All right. Something else in here, though. It's real because I choose to believe it's real.
Yes.
I really love Owen Wilson's character. I think he's a great character because he's good. He's clearly good. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't think through. In many ways, Loki is better at thinking things through than his character Mobius is. But he has a kind of almost like a despair at the root mm-hmm. of his thinking, which is, well, I even if I wanted to, I couldn't reason that out. So, I choose to believe this, and that believing makes it real. Well, clearly believing does not make it real. I mean, the classic example is the person who believes they can fly. Just as soon as they jump off the side of the building, the believing fails to make yes. the thing real.
Yeah, it's this kind of condescending view that some non-believers take towards belief.
Yeah.
It's this idea that believers really know that their religion and all religion is false, but because they don't have the courage to face the grim reality of meaninglessness,
right,
they have to invent some sort of magical story. That in the same way that if, you know, you had like a loved one die and the grief was just overwhelming, you might pretend they were still alive and just on vacation somewhere. The thing is, anyone should be able to hear that and say, no, that's actually deeply unhealthy. Like, that's just right. willful, delusional thinking.
Right, yes.
And someone who says, yeah, I'm pretending my dead wife is alive and in the next room, you wouldn't be like, well, I applaud that. To believe it is yeah. for it to be real to you. You would hopefully say, oh, that's something is deeply troubling here. Like, there's something really traumatic that you're not coping with. And the problem is, and I think, ironically, we get a sense of this with Sagan. There are atheists who realize that their worldview is traumatic. The idea that the universe comes from nothing, means nothing, that human dignity is an illusion.
Oh, yeah.
All of those things. Like, yeah, there's something very traumatic about that. The mistake is that they think other people also believe this on some level, know this, and just pretend otherwise. When it's like, no, actually, other people maybe just don't have that dark of a vision of reality. They actually believe this because they think it's true, not just because they're telling themselves a funny story.
All right, I'm going to move on to the next one.
All right,
if we may. All right, let's get another clip.
Maybe you started an uprising or were just late for work. Whatever it was, stepping off your path created a nexus event, which left unchecked could branch off into madness, leading to another multiversal war.
All right, I'm just going to leave it there. That's a very small clip of part of an explanation of this whole multiverse that Loki inhabits. But I particularly like the graphic where it's a red line of the what they call the sacred timeline, mm-hmm. and then all these branches coming off. It's madness. And I was, as I watched the show, this was something that stuck out to me, and I wanted to ask you to reflect on it. It occurred to me that this is essentially a polytheistic world mm-hmm. that and not polytheistic in the sense of all of these various gods created this world. Just we're prescinding completely from that question. We're not even much like often ancient polytheism was. What we really need to concern ourselves with are the gods that can affect us. And there are these timekeepers. Loki himself is a god. There's a godlike powers here and there, and all of it is chaos. It is utter chaos and terrifying. And I think this is something that, living 2,000 years after the birth of Christ, and all that Christianity, the Judeo-Christianity really, contributed to a kind of assurance that the universe is the creation of a loving God, a Father God who cares for it. All without that assurance, this is what the universe is. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly how it was for the Romans and the Greeks mm-hmm. and the Indians and the Ethiopians and everybody before Christ came, or certainly before the Jewish prophets began to teach about the loving God.
Yeah, I think this really ties in nicely to what we were just talking about. There is this idea that a lot of atheists kind of have some sense that their philosophy is horrible. Like, it's horrifying.
Yeah.
Like, you, right. Even if you think it's true, you should hope it isn't.
Yeah. My philosophy is so bad that you invented a religion to get away from it. That's that's essentially what many atheists
are
saying.
It's the opium of the masses because you needed something to numb yourself to how horrible.
Right. So face the horror. Well, that's an uplifting message. But here, polytheism is equally horrifying.
In a lot of ways, it's the same thing. I know that sounds really weird. But none of the gods in Loki are real gods in the capital G sort of god sense.
They're just more powerful.
Yeah, they're just more powerful beings. And some of them maybe you could hypothetically even have spiritual beings, although it doesn't seem like they're even spiritual. They're just material beings that are just bigger and more powerful.
Right.
What they mean by God isn't capital G God.
No.
So David Bentley Hart has a book that kind of explores this, that what Jews and Christians and even late like Greco-Roman pagans and Baha'i and some Buddhists mean by God is the infinite, uncreated creator of everything.
Islam as well, though. Does he?
Yes, Islam? Sorry, Islam as well.
Yeah.
But I'm think he's focusing especially on very ancient.
Okay.
Islam is 600 years after based in some heavy ways on Christianity.
Right.
But I think his point is like, this isn't some Christian invention. The philosophers realized for there to be a universe, you have to have a god like this. Let me give you...
Or at least a demiurge, something that's...
Something bigger than Loki offers.
Yes, right.
Because otherwise you have these just powerful beings that aren't powerful enough to create everything,
right.
Still live in this uncontrolled anarchy chaos, and then it just becomes might makes right. Aquinas' argument from contingency, that there are some things that are contingent, meaning... They have a creator. They only exist under certain conditions. You see that very clearly in a multiverse. If you go this way, this thing's going to happen. If you go that way, it's not going to happen. That's, you know, the nexus event. Those are all contingencies. But if everything is contingent, why does anything exist becomes the question. That you need someone or something that's uncreated, that's non-contingent, in philosophical terms, something necessary. And we can start to say things about that something. And so Aquinas raises this in part one of the Summa, and in question 7, he gets into the infinity of God. And one of the points he makes is, yes, you need one infinite God. That you, just to account for the existence of everything, you need a non-finite God. But you can't have two infinite gods, because you can't have two contrary infinites.
Right.
So if you can't have two all-powerful gods that disagree with each other, that's a contradiction in terms.
Right. And I don't think a person like Cicero or Aristotle would have had any problem with that.
Oh, no. I mean, Aristotle pretty clearly believes in something like that. Yeah. Socrates, you know.
They wouldn't have said it exactly as Thomas said it, but they wouldn't have argued with Thomas, I don't
think. And, you know, even like one of the reasons Socrates is put to death is because he realizes that the gods of the Romans aren't, the gods of the Greeks aren't gods in this sense.
Right. He's a corrupter of the youth for that reason.
Right. And so the Christians likewise were often accused of atheism because they said the gods aren't gods.
Yeah.
And they weren't saying we don't believe in any gods. They're just saying what you guys mean by gods are just powerful spiritual beings, which Christianity is fine with accepting. We're fine saying there are powerful angels, there are powerful demons that are out there.
Yes.
And we're even fine with calling them gods in some senses. You know, like in the Psalms, God sits in the company of the gods.
Yeah.
What we mean by gods with the lowercase g is not something equal or equivalent or even close to the infinite uncreated God.
The creator.
Yeah. And so what's striking is that polytheism in the sense that you kind of see in Loki, it really does become another form of atheism because you have gods with no God.
Oh, that's right. Instead of just having humanity with no God, you have gods with no... You have a
exactly.
universe where...
Exactly. And so an atheist could believe in all of that. They could believe there are powerful aliens that are way stronger than humans that would appear as God to us.
Right.
All of that's consistent with atheism. So it's striking. You know, one of the things Loki says at one point is that Asgard is who created him. And Mobius says, oh, yeah, the Sky King. That sounds. And then you realize, like, oh, yeah, Asgard is just one more in this. That just as there's this multiple Lokis... There are multiple Asgards.
Right.
And so, multiple Odins. Like, there's all of these super powerful gods that aren't actually
again and
that
again
powerful.
Again and again and again. Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, right. Like, Loki himself, there's a variety of Lokis. So, in what sense is he even the god of mischief if there's an infinite number of other gods of mischief.
And it really does bring it back to that original point of, like, then Loki becomes just a placeholder that means, like, well, in our universe, the kind of tricksters we have, you know, we'll call them Loki.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I guess this brings up something. I mean, the sense of chaos in this universe actually, I think, is re-emerging. I think a lot of young people who are in the nuns category, they don't have a religious affiliation, actually do experience a universe of that's much more terrifying than the universe that a Christian young person is exposed to.
Yeah, I think rightly so. I mean, it follows from their belief system.
Yeah, and many would see that as a badge of honor. Like, my universe is more terrifying because I'm not afraid to face reality.
But, right, that's such a circular kind of argument, though, isn't it?
Right, yeah.
You're like, oh, I'm not afraid to admit my parents don't love me. You know, it's like, well, if that's true, yeah, then maybe you get a badge for bravery, although I think it's a weird thing to be really proud of. But if instead you're just having an overly pessimistic view, then, like, you can easily distort reality in a negative way. You know, CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, deals with people who have not rose-tinted glasses, but gray-tinted glasses, where everything is viewed as worse than it is in reality. Like, the thing we should be striving for is not having the boldest but the most accurate vision of the world, to see reality as it truly is. So, like, the reason Christianity is worth following is not because it's rosy. The reason Christianity is following is because it's true. The fact that reality is good is a bonus. Yeah. And right. A bonus that I think on some level we have to acknowledge we know. Meaning this, like, even an atheist who says, oh, reality is horrible, just face the terror, still avoids death. They still get up every morning. They don't just kill themselves. They continue to fight this fight of existence. And that fight for existence, in some ways, is pretty hardwired in us. That, I think, is pretty decent evidence that on some level we all know reality is something worth fighting for. Reality is something that's good that we're a part of.
Right.
And we want to continue to be a part of it.
All right. Let me get to a point that Andrew made about this. In his consideration of it, and that is actually a very positive thing. And so I want to end on a positive note about Loki.
That you raises have the guts to face the darkness. Of,
yes, Andrew
of
just
this
doesn't have
episode.
What's wrong with Andrew? He's not brave enough to face how horrible Loki is. This character Loki is presented as evil in many ways, mm-hmm. and even says at one point, you know, he's not a child, and what distinguishes him from a child is, he claims that he knows that no one is really good and no one is really evil. And that's actually not wisdom. I mean, that's false wisdom, but he has that. But there is something very true in the fact that among human beings, none of us is perfect. None of us is irredeemable here mm-hmm. where we are now on this earth. And so I'm sure that, you know, expressed differently, we could be sympathetic to what Loki is saying. But here's this character who's evil, who now is taken out of his kind of, you know, path in the one universe that he knew and brought into this multiverse. And now he begins to realize, well, maybe there's another aspect to me, or there are other aspects to me, and maybe I'm even capable of being good. And this is, I mean, it's almost a conversion experience, mm-hmm. really. I mean, in a weird way, a conversion experience is that. It's by some inspiration, you're taken out of your usual narrative where you realize a whole different possibility. So that's a very positive part of Loki. I wonder what you thought about it.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think one of the critiques that I've seen of Loki and a lot of the, especially the Marvel kind of stories, is that they have these redemption arcs for likable and often beautiful characters, while the victims just kind of go unaddressed.
Oh,
like
that's
if you compare it to, say, like the 12 steps, where you actually make amends to the people that you've harmed.
Right.
Here it's enough to just kind of feel vaguely bad for it or realize you could go a different direction.
I see.
So it's kind of an incomplete redemption in certain ways.
Well, I mean, but, I'm sure they want to have a season two, and a complete redemption of Loki would ruin the drama.
True.
I mean,
and a long one where he just goes and like goes door to door apologizing to families for killing their loved ones. Like that would be a little bit of a drag.
Sorry about that Manhattan thing.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Right. Like there's a reason we don't see the cleanup after all. You know, the Avengers save New York and cause billions of dollars in damage.
Right.
So I get it. We should be aware that like true redemption often is harder than just vaguely feeling bad about the things you did. Judas felt bad about what he did. He even gave back the money.
Yeah.
But there was no, like, it was an incomplete redemption arc.
Yeah.
And so...
So what completes the redemption arc in your mind?
Yeah. And I think it depends a little bit on the context. I think making actual amends is an important part when possible. I think there's a reason, you know, the 12 steps work because, like, actually facing the consequences of what you've done without blinking, not as a way of, like, self-loathing, not as just I'm no better than this, but realizing if I go this way, this is what happens to people, is actually, I think, a really important thing. And the second is really turning to Christ. I mean, obviously, you're not going to get that in Loki. But the difference between Peter and Judas is that Peter trusts in the mercy of God. Like, Peter knows that there is a way for him to be redeemed.
Yeah.
And there's something, even though it's not explicitly religious in Loki, that I think is kind of hinting at that, that there is this, even if he wants to be better, the people around him don't necessarily believe he can be anything other than he was.
Right.
That he's in the need of actual mercy. He's in need of actually someone saying, yes, you want to be better and you can be better and more exists for you. And the beautiful thing about Christianity is there's someone who can do that for us.
Amen. Amen. All right. Well, thank you. I really enjoyed our conversation about Loki.
I really enjoyed getting to talk about superhero movies on the job.
I know. I had to spend $7.99 to get a month of Disney Plus, but now I'm watching everything on it, and it's been confirmed for me again just how bad those three middle Star Wars movies are.
Oh,
they're horrible.
Wait. 4, 5, and 6?
Yeah. Oh my. No. The
the prequels.
No, 1, 2, 3.
Okay. Yeah. Like, you don't mean the chronologically.
So
if you were just like the prequels are good and I don't like Return of the Jedi or
I was rooting for Darth Vader to become evil. You just can't wait because the rest of it's so boring. No, the Trade Guild is fascinating though. I wish there was yes. more movies about the Trade Guild.
I'd like that spinoff.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I feel like talking to Joe Heschmeyer, you could talk about just about anything and you'd get a great answer. But it was fun to talk about Loki, who raised a lot of ultimate questions. I almost feel like since it was a Marvel production, we should have some kind of post-credits thing on this episode to fit in the Marvel Comics mode. Hey, if you have an idea of some piece of media that you think that we should respond to, that's something we'd like to do more of. And, you know, we can't watch all the platforms. I don't even know all the platforms. You can always send us an email, focus@catholic.com. focus@catholic.com. We want to hear from you. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to like and subscribe. If you're listening on one of the podcast services, then subscribe. Then you'll be updated when there's new episodes. And please give us that 5-star review, maybe a few nice words to help grow the podcast. As always, you can support us financially by going to givecatholic.com and give in any amount. givecatholic.com. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Thanks for joining us for this Loki episode. We'll see you next time right here, God willing, on Catholic Answers Focus.